Good morning, everybody. Brian Newber here from goldenblack.com, live once again in the old home office here with my colleague Tom Deanhart. This is our weekly Purdue Recruiting Rewind feature. We've done 97, 98, 99, 2000. So sequentially, we're up to the class of 2001. Obviously, a class Purdue assembled coming off the Rose Bowl that we're going to talk about a little bit here as a companion to Tom's story that ran Wednesday morning. This is brought to you by our friends at Follett's Purdue Bookstores, Purdue Federal Credit Union, Sixth Street Dive Restaurant, First Source Bank, East End Grill, and the Charters Team Remaxability Plus. So without further ado, Tom, you've spent the last however many months of your life digging deep into the 2001 Purdue football recruiting class. What did you unearth?
Yeah, it's always fun to do. I always love looking over my shoulder at the past. I love analyzing old recruiting classes and revisiting history, shall they say. And like you said, this is the class built off Purdue's Rose Bowl season. These recruits had 4 years of evidence of the Joe Tiller era to make their decision on. So there's tangible proof Tiller knew what he was doing, Brian. But as you know, you were living this back then and covering this extensively. It seemed like no matter how much success Tiller had, yes, he raised the bar from a recruiting standpoint, but he could never seemingly close the deal on those elite recruits when he had to go head-to-head with the Georgias or the Notre Dames or the Michigans. He may have gotten a guy here or there, but, you know, they swung and missed a lot of people. They were trying to go bigger, but they could never really close the deal. And that was sort of a tenor that repeated itself often here during the Tiller era. But still, a decent class here, Brian, in a class, of course, led by the quarterback, Kyle Orton, from Iowa, who obviously lived up to his hype, and then some, Brian, and definitely, I think, earned a spot in Purdue's cradle of quarterbacks.
Yeah, we talk about Purdue's ability to get elite recruits, and, you know, that's the guy who paid for this whole class, essentially. You know, Kyle Orton was as elite a quarterback as Purdue has signed in the modern era. He was, at the time of his summertime commitment, he was one of the top five quarterbacks in the country. I mean, an elite player. And the story of this class really was, you know, Purdue getting him and then hanging on to him, because I don't know how many people remember the story, but in the summer after he committed, or the summer he did commit, soon thereafter, Gary Barnett at Colorado at the time, who had his way of getting into committed players' ears, almost flipped him. And, you know, Kyle Orton being from Iowa, I know Iowa is not necessarily close to Colorado, but it was in that general Big 12 footprint at the time. Kyle Orton, you know, might have fit Boulder well, for all we know, and Colorado almost got him. Colorado almost stole him. The saving grace there was Kyle Orton, by urban legend. However this all actually went down, I don't know, but the urban legend was that – actually, I think Kyle Orton might have actually – said this too, so I shouldn't call it urban legend. This is probably pretty close to fact. Kyle Orton went out to the Elite 11 camp, wherever it was at the time. I think it was almost always out in California back then, if it still isn't. And one of the counselors happened to be none other than Drew Brees. So Drew Brees kind of, I don't know if he saved the day, if he got in Orton's ear and recruited him back to Purdue, or if Orton just being around Drew Brees just resonated Purdue with him left and right. But obviously Kyle Orton ended up at Purdue. You know, if he'd stayed healthy that last year, he might have won the Heisman for all we know. I mean, he was obviously a really good quarterback, great quarterback at times in his career, dealt with a lot of stuff through the course of his college career. Obviously went on to have a good, productive NFL career. Obviously that was the player that kind of stands head and shoulders above this whole class. If it was just Kyle Orton you signed, you know, that would have been worth it. Here was a guy who got the starting position late in his freshman year. Yeah. Whenever he let go of it, it was because he had concussions or bleeding from his hip or whatever it was. He dealt with a lot of crap at Purdue. But when he was at his best at Purdue, he was quite possibly the best quarterback in the country.
Yeah, he took over late in 2001 that fall, Brian. As you noted, I think he started the last three or four games. Brandon Hance, of course, began 2001 as Purdue starter.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he, like you said, had a great career. And, you know, you talk about, you know, red letter prospects in this class. course, Orton's one. And the other, I think you would agree, is the wide receiver, Kevin Noel from Naperville, Illinois. You know, he had a solid career. Is that a fair way to assess Noel's career in West Lafayette?
Well, he was a rotational player at one point in his career, but he obviously didn't have the sort of career people thought he would based on his recruiting rankings, based on his offers. He was really quite possibly to that point in the Tiller era, he was the highest rated receiver they signed. I remember him being a like what would amount to a four-star type of guy today. He was very highly recruited, ended up choosing Purdue over Georgia Tech. But he just didn't have the career that a lot of people – I shouldn't say that. Tiller signed A.T. Simpson in 97. Yeah, he would have been the most decorated receiver Purdue would sign. But Kevin Noel wasn't far behind. Purdue thought it had finally landed that elusive blue-chip receiver. It just didn't work out for whatever reason. I can't remember Kevin Noel being the fastest guy in the world. I don't know exactly what it was that held him back necessarily, but he didn't go on to have the sort of career that was hoped for him. But this class did produce a lot of guys who kind of outpunched their weight class, so to speak, from a prestige perspective. Brent Grover was a really big-time recruit from Kentucky, a middle linebacker. Brandon Villarreal from Texas was one of the many Texas recruits in this class. Both of those guys were big, oversized middle linebacker types that Purdue made into defensive tackles, and they turned into really good players and really important players on a couple of really, really good Purdue teams that won a lot of games. Both of those guys at the time, Purdue was looking for speed and quickness defensively more than they were looking for size and strength. Size and strength always would have been nice, but I think Purdue wanted to be athletic at those positions. Brent Grover and Brandon Villarreal would have been big, slow, plodding middle linebackers. They turned out to be quick and athletic playmakers at defensive tackle. Brandon Villarreal's quickness, I think, was a big deal. Brent Grover, had, I believe, a knack for getting a hand up and batting down passes. None of those guys were ever that 310-pound, you know, kind of road grader defensive tackle, but both of those guys were really productive players and part of a good class of Texas signees in this class.
Yeah, five signees from the Lone Star State. Brian, that sort of continued a trend under Joe Tiller, who really made a point of farming the Lone Star State. I always remember they said they liked how the high school academics were set up down there. Yeah. A lot of the kids they signed, they knew were going to get into school. I remember also they didn't think that was always the case with the kids they would sign from Florida. Mm-hmm. So they liked to go to that well down in Texas and get those players. And like you said, this was a fruitful class. Bobby Achikawu, a linebacker from Arlington, Texas, another pretty workman, journeyman, solid player for Purdue during his career, another Texas product. And, you know, Brian, we can't talk about this class without mentioning the running back, or actually he came to Purdue as an athlete. Really a wide receiver his first two or three years on campus. Jared Boyd, a track star from the state of Maryland. He redshirted his first year. I talked to him not too long ago, Brian. He said he was primed to play right away, the very first game of the year of his career. And then 9/11 happened. Then he hurt a hamstring. Then they just redshirted him. But he went on to lead Purdue in rushing three times during his career. A real tall, angular running back, Brian, and a running back, I think, time has forgotten how productive he was.
Yeah, and how good of a prospect he was. You know, he came to Purdue as a wide receiver. They were going to make him a wide receiver. And, you know, we talk a lot about Raheem Mostert and why he didn't necessarily work out at Purdue as he has in the NFL. Part of it was the fact that he really struggled to learn wide receiver. He really struggled to learn running back. He wasn't a natural at any of those positions. He was just kind of a fast guy. So I don't think he was as good of a football player when he was at Purdue as he was a prospect. And once he got to the NFL, you get, you know, professional coaching. It's your profession. You're doing it all the time. You get around enough coaches, as Raheem Mostert has done, because he's kicked around the league so much. Sooner or later, the light's going to come on when you have enough physical talent. And that's exactly what Raheem Mostert's done in the NFL. That's what Jerod Voigt did, you know, relatively early in his Purdue career, because he came as a wide receiver. He was a 6'2", 190-pound, really fast dude.
Yeah.
And they moved him to running back because they thought he had a good feel and short yardage. They thought that was just kind of his natural position. And he did. He ended up being a 6'2", 215-pound dude who had a very distinct patience to him and a big physical presence with combined with legitimate, you know, 4.4 type of speed and a 6'2" body, 215 pounds, was a hell of a package. But he did just have a poise about him in sort of goal line situations, short yardage, where he had a patience to him, where he could see things kind of opening up. And Purdue had a couple of those guys under Tiller, Steve Ennis previously, where they just were kind of really good in goal line situations. So that became their niche. That's the best job in football. Hey, just go out there and score the touchdowns. And for a while, that's kind of what Gerard Voigt started off doing. And if I recall correctly, he evolved into more of an every down sort of back. But Purdue also had some very good running backs on this team that Gerard Voigt shared carries with, one of which obviously being Brandon Jones.
Yeah, Brandon Jones, part of this class, Peru, Indiana. Built a little bit differently than Boyd, 5'11", 215, probably not quite that tall. Another back who probably was a little underrated. We spoke off camera. You thought under different circumstances, Brandon Jones maybe could have been a number one running back for Purdue in the right era. But again, there was some talent in the backfield in West Lafayette at that time. Jones got stuck in a crowded house, so to speak. But again, a productive, tough, hard runner. He was another back in his class. And Brian, talk a little bit about Brandon Jones. And also, there's one last running back in this class, one of the most, I guess, the biggest enigmas Purdue's ever recruited, one of the shortest tenures of any player in Purdue history, and Reggie Benton from Grand Blanc, Michigan. You could write a book about this kid, I think.
Yeah, it is funny that, you know, when we go back and remember these recruiting classes, we end up talking so much about the guys who were awesome when they signed who just didn't pan out for one reason or another. And one of the most spectacular of the burnouts was Reggie Benton, who signed with Michigan out of high school. This kid was big time, like big time, big time, big time. And he signed with Michigan out of high school. Something happened, whether academic, whatever it may be. He came back on the market. Purdue got him to sign. And he got to Purdue in the fall and lasted a few days. He was just gone one day. We went out to practice out at the old intramural playing fields, and he was just gone. And I don't know what happened. As Tiller said, he just doesn't want to play college football anymore, apparently, or something like that. But back to Brandon Jones real quick. Yeah, I thought he was always a productive player. He was always a good player. He was a good receiver. He was a good runner. Always had other good running backs around him. I'm not really sure what it was that maybe he never got over some of those guys. I don't know if the top end speed was the same as was a Gerard Voigt or a Joey Harris or some of the other guys they had in the program at that time. But every time Brandon Jones was in there, he ran over somebody. He broke somebody's leg in practice running over them. He caught passes. He did a lot of positive things. And he could have been – if he had ever been the guy, I think he would have been a really productive player. Why he wasn't ever the guy probably had something to do with the fact Purdue had a bunch of other good running backs and nobody was really ever the guy. But Reggie Benton, I'm sure would have been interesting to follow his career had he made it at Purdue for more than 3 days.
Sort of a sad story. I just hope everything's okay now. And Brian, you know, Purdue, has forged a nice reputation for producing tight ends the last 25, 30 years. You know, we talk about Dustin Keller and Tim Stratton, of course, among others, going back to Dave Young, back during the Mark Herman era, Cliff Benson. This class, Brian, had a pretty good tight end in the form of Charles Davis from Orchard Lake, Michigan, 6'6", 265-pound kid. Brian, he even played a little basketball, right?
Yeah. Later in his career, when Matt Painter had very few players, Charles Davis walked on, helped them out. I mean, he was worth having on the team. He wasn't just filling a uniform. I mean, he didn't play all that much, but you know, he was a fan favorite. He was a big physical kid who tried hard. Mm-hmm. He was worth having around on a team that didn't have a lot going for it. And I think that endeared him to fans quite a bit. But you know, I'm not sure Purdue football has had many players who looked the part better than Charles Davis did. That kid looked like $1 million. I mean, he was all of 6'6", all of 250 pounds. It was all packed in like twisted steel. He was a good athlete. He was light on his feet. He had good hands. He wasn't the most physical kid for looking the way he did, He wasn't the most consistent receiver, but he did everything well enough, and he looked like $1 million, and he looked like an NFL player, and he got an opportunity to play in the NFL. But he was a really, really impressive recruit, too. You know, the tight end position, too, Purdue would have had a really good player, too, in Mike Reinhart, had Mike Reinhart not had his career ended by concussions. He's done just fine. I think he's a doctor. I'm not sure that doctor, lawyer, one or the other. He's been really successful. But, you know, he was a quarterback from Fort Wayne, a big 6'6", towering Statue of Liberty type quarterback who Purdue recruited as a tight end. And he came in and he had great hands. He ran really well. He was smart. He would have been a really, really good receiving tight end at Purdue, I think, had he not suffered a bunch of concussions, and that ended his career. His, I guess, the one play fans might remember more than any other was the tight end throw deep down the field at Iowa in 2002 that got intercepted. He kind of joked about that afterwards, about it, that being the official end of his quarterback days, or Joe Tiller did, or whatever. But he was a great kid who's been very successful after Purdue. Would have been a really good player, in my opinion, had he not suffered some concussions. Good for him, though, too, for, you know, not, you know, coming out of that with any sort of long-lasting issue, because he's, as I said, he's gone on to be successful. You know, the last thing you want to do is have your football career ended for reasons that would also affect your ability to have a productive, you know, career afterwards. So a couple other guys single out in this class, Matt Turner, Brian Hickman, were a couple of productive guys, in this class as well. You want to talk about them a little bit?
Yeah. You know, Hickman was a guy playing in the secondary, sort of a tall, thin cornerback, but he was in the rotation from what I remember. And Turner, just like his brother, Rob, who played before him, just a big, tough, physical interior offensive lineman. And I think we can also at least throw a mention to Brent Hawkins as well, Brian, from Jerseyville, Illinois, which is just across the river from St. Louis, not too far. Mm-hmm. A heck of a physical specimen. He played 2 years in West Lafayette, transferred to Illinois State, finished there, and he actually played in the National Football League a few years with the Jacksonville Jaguars, played up in the CFL. But Hawkins was like I said, just looked like a Greek god. And I've seen some shots of him today, Brian. He's still in spectacular shape. Looks like he's a bodybuilder.
Yeah, he was kind of Cliff Averill before Cliff Averill. Like, he came to Purdue as an outside linebacker, looked like $1 million. They needed help, or they thought he was a better fit at defensive end. They moved him to like a pass rushing role. The one play I remember from Brent Hawkins is, I think you remember the 97 yard touchdown by Dallas Clark at Iowa in 2002, the game Purdue had no business losing but lost anyway. I think he broke contain or lost contain or something on that, or was supposed to be covering Dallas Clark and didn't, and it ended up going for like a 97 yard touchdown. I may not be remembering that correctly. If I'm not, my apologies to Brent Hawkins, but I remember him being on the field for that, where number 57, I believe, and that Dallas Clark play just being the
backbreaker,
being the play of a day that you could have set to the Benny Hill theme music, and it would have encapsulated Purdue's loss beautifully, because it was Purdue had no business losing that game to Brad Banks, who was a Heisman candidate that year in Iowa. But that's what happened. But you know, Brian Hickman turned out to be a pretty decent player. He was always one of those guys where you look at him and he's got like bird legs, and you kind of wonder, is this kid big and physical enough, you know, to play corner in the Big Ten? But he did a pretty good job. If I recall correctly, he might have gotten thrown in the fire in one of the bowl games after another guy flunked out. I may not be remembering that correctly, but I'm pretty sure that might be the case. Well said on my part, huh? Who is the other guy we were talking about?
Those guys, you know, we talked about Turner. You know, we talked about
Matt Hawk, Turner, yeah. And Hickman. Joe Tiller once called him the little hedgehog, and I thought that was funny because he was this kind of circular little leverage exploiting offensive guard who later moved to center. He wasn't as big and massive as his brother Rob, who was a freaking mountain, but he was tough and low to the ground and really good with leverage and smart and a good kid and versatile and played guard, played center, and did a good job for them. He wasn't like an NFL guy. He wasn't like an all Big Ten guy, but he was a good, serviceable, winning player for Purdue, and they were fortunate to have had him. They're probably lucky they recruited the Turner family, because there's never been a more enthusiastic parent than I think Rob and Matt Turner's mom.
It's always good. Parents get into it. Brian, we'll end on this, my friend. We always have to talk about the one that got away, or sometimes the two or three that got away. Maybe it's just me and other people. We sometimes focus too much on what we don't have instead of what we have. And again, recruiting, we love to say, what if we almost had this guy for Purdue in this class? The one that got away, the biggest fish that got off the hook, is what, Ben Wilkerson, you think, the center?
Yeah, probably. I'm getting old and I'm forgetting my fish stories in recruiting. But the one guy who I really remember as being a guy Purdue really wanted, and at the time, Kevin Sumlin was doing a really good job recruiting in Houston and in Texas in general. And they were pretty locked into Ben Wilkerson, who was a guy who would have come, had he come to Purdue, and there was an academic appeal to Purdue at the time that he was interested in that, depending on who you believe, almost got him to Purdue. When you go back and read stories about it now, it's like, well, it was LSU and all these SEC teams. But I do think Purdue, you know, was very much in that mix for him. And this was a guy who would have been the breakthrough offensive line recruit, you know, of all time for Purdue, probably would have been their starting center from day one, and then probably been in the NFL after year three. He went to LSU. You know, this was at a time when LSU hadn't won national titles yet or anything like that. They were still kind of in their little, 40 days and 40 nights period. He went to LSU and had a good career there. I think he played in the NFL, but had he come to Purdue, he would have been an absolute game changer for them, obviously. Purdue was in that phase there where they had a couple good guards on their offensive line, and they had to move a guard in the center every year to make sure center was covered. Had Ben Wilkerson come in 2001, maybe Gene Murkowski, you know, Matt Turner, perhaps those guys stay at guard their whole careers. Not that it really wasn't ideal for them to be playing center, but you would have had more guys, more established guys. But that's the one guy who kind of comes to mind. I'm sure there were like 20 wide receivers they recruited to that they wanted that they didn't get, but that's Ben Wilkerson's the one guy who comes to mind, obviously.
Yeah, just a couple other names just going back through the old Golden Black archives that were mentioned on signing day as players Purdue wanted, or at least recruited heavily, thought they were involved with, didn't get. Wide receiver Corey Mace, who went to Notre Dame. Running back Kelly Baraka, who signed with Michigan. And again, varying degrees of interest, who knows, from both parties. But linebacker Matt Roth, who signed with Iowa, were just a few of the other names I saw mentioned. So, again, Tiller and company tried to keep raising the bar to bring in better athletes. Sometimes they hit. More often than not, they really struggled to close the deal when they had to go head-to-head with maybe programs perceived to be better. But there's no doubt this class left its mark in West Lafayette, coming full circle where we started this, Brian, with the arrival of Kyle Orton, who in a lot of ways was a transcendent talent under center. So it's always fun looking back, my friend. And your knowledge and just the passion for this is what makes it special, getting those stories.
Fair enough. Yeah, obviously Kyle Orton was the player in this class. What was interesting about him was Purdue was such a short passing sort of offense. All of a sudden, you had this guy who, you know, was this big-armed, you know, quarterback, and you kind of wondered early in his career a little bit, is this going to be a good fit? Because I think, as I wrote once, you know, Purdue was kind of asking him to putt with his driver at times. And but he turned out to be a great player, turned out to be a productive NFL player, had an eventful NFL career, but was, you know, was a successful professional. And that's the goal at the end of the day. So that's where we'll leave this. Once again, this has been your Purdue Football Recruiting Rewind for the class of 2001. It's been brought to you by Follett's Purdue Bookstores, Purdue Federal Credit Union, Sixth Street Dive Restaurant, First Source Bank, East End Grill, and the Charters Team Remaxability Plus. So for Brian Newbert, me, and Tom Beanhart, him, Thank you, everybody, for watching. Thank you for listening. And we'll be back next week with Guess What Class. Add one to 2001 and you get 2002. So we'll talk to you then. Thanks, everybody.